You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Chicago is to blame. When the movie, which at one point was supposed to star Liza Minnelli and Goldie Hawn, finally reached screens in 2002, the results were so thrilling, so accomplished, and so entertaining that it led to years of questionable movie musicals trying to replicate its Oscar-winning formula. But that was then, and hindsight is 2020. How does Chicago hold up? Is it still hotcha? Or do today's audiences want to skidoo? I'm Mark Peikert. I bet you want to know why I shot the bastard. And you're listening to Movie Musical Madness. That's showbiz, kid. Joining me today is Mary Sunshine Neely, just out of the Convent of the Sacred Heart. Mary, I'm so excited that you wanted to do Chicago, because this is one of maybe two movie musicals where I'm like, I'm intimidated to talk about this because I really love this movie.
No, I think it's like one of the best movie musicals ever, maybe?
Yes, it's this and Cabaret for me.
Yes, no, I know. Singing in the Rain, Chicago, well, I don't know. I think that's it.
This has been a very brief episode. So my first question for you is, how familiar were you with the show before the movie premiered?
Well, to be honest with you, I think I was in like the fifth grade or sixth grade when the movie came out. So I was a huge theater kid, like when I was in elementary school, but I wasn't super familiar with this one in particular.
It would be weird if you were a child who was obsessed with
like
Chicago.
A Fosse fan. If I was like in fourth grade, like Fosse is my life. No, I know. So I remember when the movie came out and like, it did have some mature themes, but I did see it and I was blown away. And then when I was a little bit older, I actually have my playbill. I have my playbill from when I saw it. It was the touring production in Los Angeles. It came to the Pantages Theater in Hollywood.
I love the prop work.
Here, I know people can't see. I'm holding the playbill.
So you were not familiar with the show before the movie came out. Were you as obsessed with the movie when you saw it as I was as a 52-year-old man?
I was really, really into it. And I remember like I did a lot of like musical reviews, you know, like community theater, like where it's like they slap together a bunch of songs and like this very loose narrative that like kind of makes sense or something. Like everybody wanted to do all of that jazz. So I remember when I was like in seventh or eighth grade in a leotard and like a weird little wig being like, and all, like, do you know what I mean? Like that was like the song.
In my community theater in small town Texas, we did And the World Goes Round, the Candor Neb review. But okay. The director thought that he knew best. And so in addition to most of the songs and the world goes round, he started interpolating other things. So we do all of these Candor Neb songs. I danced in all that jazz. I think I did a leap and landed on one knee, which is insane to think about because I have no coordination or rhythm. We ended singing Being Alive.
That's so confusing.
So, and I kind of knew Chicago before because I got very, very into theater and musicals. Uh-huh. And I was a huge Gwen Verdon fan. Mm. And so one Christmas, my mother got me the original cast album for Chicago and I listened to it constantly. And then I remember vividly where I was. I was in my dorm at Sarah Lawrence College when the casting for the motion picture came out. Richard Gere, I said, Catherine Zeta-Jones, Bridget Jones is going to be, oh, no, 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 no. Well, believe you me, I ate crow when I saw that movie because I flipped when this movie came out. I had a Chicago poster on my wall in that dorm room, or a different dorm room. It was the next year. that I strangely, and I was thinking about this when I was getting ready for this episode, I had a Chicago poster that I won at a screening of Steel Magnolias hosted by drag queen Hedda Lettuce in a competition to recite dialogue from the movie.
And you won?
I came in second. Somebody else did. Don't talk about me like I'm not here. And they won. I played two characters and did the cuppa 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 recipe, and I came in second.
Oh, you were robbed.
Thank you. I didn't want to say it, but other people have over the years, so yes. I appreciate that. I appreciate that acknowledgement.
Yeah. No, I love a good behind-the-scenes video, and I actually, it's funny, because like I wrote a musical movie. And so I was trying to do a lot of, I'm still trying, always learning. Come on. I was like trying to figure out the transitions that go between, I mean, obviously we have to think about this on stage, the transition between a speaking moment and when the song starts. But in film, I feel like it's even more drastic and you really have to think about the logistics. And I feel like this film does the best way of like transitioning between speaking moments and like in kind of reality into this like escapist song moment or whatever. And so I was watching the behind the scenes and just like, I had this newfound respect for Renee Zellweger and Catherine Zeta-Jones because they like really went for it. And it was just like them in rehearsal. And like, I didn't even know that Catherine Zeta-Jones was like a trained theater actor. And also Renee Zellweger was like ripped. Like she has like the craziest back muscles in this movie.
So I rewatched the movie last night so that we could have this conversation.
Yes, and I rewatched this morning.
I loved it just as much. There are a few things. There always are. I'm impossible to please, Mary. I'm just going to say it. I think she's a better dancer in Hot Honey Rag than Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Yeah.
Also, so her good. Body. I don't know if it's just bones sticking out or if those are muscles, but either way, she's rocking it.
Rocking it. I was like, whoa, she's ripped.
She is so, so good in this movie. And let's put this all in perspective. 2002 was maybe the last movie when adults still went to the movie theater, because here were the movies released that were nominated for Oscars that year.
Mm-hmm.
Chicago.
Yes.
Gangs of New York.
Mm-hmm.
Adaptation.
Mm.
Far From Heaven. The Hours.
Mm.
Frida. The Pianist.
Oh my God.
And you're just like, what, how in one single calendar year?
No, I know. I feel like that's what happens when you look back at Oscar nominations I guess it is any time between or before 2002, 2003. It's like every single one is like just incredible. And then it's like so insane to wrap your mind around the fact that they all were competing against each other.
I know. And there are so many things about this movie that are so, so genius. One, I think that they did a great job with the score in terms of the performance. I mean, even Richard Gere's weird accent that he only does on the songs kind of works for me.
Yeah.
It's also strange to watch it almost 20 years later, because I remember back then I was like, oh, Richard Gere is old now. Oh, he's so old now. And watching it today or yesterday, I was like, oh my God, he's so sexy.
Handsome man. Yeah.
Oh, he's a very handsome gentleman, and I'm here for it.
Yeah.
So I do want to address a few things.
Yes.
Before we continue with our love letter to Chicago and to Renee Zellweger, who I've always been obsessed with.
She's amazing.
What derailed her career for a while was she became so famous. She is a character actress who is never supposed to be a movie star.
Mm, interesting take. Yeah.
Because you watch the things where she's trying to do the leading lady thing, like that, what was that weird rom-com where she moved to Alaska and Harry Connick Jr. was there?
Oh no, I don't even know what that
exactly.
is.
Exactly. But you know about Nurse Betty, and you know about Bridget Jones's Diary, of course.
Of course. She was so good in Cold Mountain, too. Did you ever see that?
Of course. I only cried once, and I only had one tear, and I stole that one from a crocodile.
Yeah. So
Oscar.
Good.
Oscar. Well, they gave her the Oscar because she lost for... Well, they gave Nicole Kidman the Oscar for The Hours instead of Renee Zellweger for Chicago because Nicole had lost for The Others and Moulin Rouge the year before. Mm. So then the next year, they had to give Renee an Oscar because they had given Nicole her Chicago Oscar.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Which is all moot because Julianne Moore should have won both Oscars in 2003 for Far From Heaven and The Hours.
Yes. Ugh, Julianne Moore.
That's just fact.
All of them, I can't even, they're all just... geniuses.
So I have a question for you.
Yes.
Famously, in this movie, they filmed and cut Catherine Zeta-Jones and Queen Latifah singing Class. Because it didn't fit in with the overarching structure of the numbers take place in Roxy's imagination.
Right. Yes.
So why did they include Mr. Cellophane?
Do you think it's because Amos is like more related to Roxy and could be like in her kind of like subconscious than Velma and Matron Mama Morton?
Maybe. I just
well, because first of they're all, married.
Cards on the table. I really hate Mr. Cellophane.
Oh my God. Guess what? I sang that. In yet another review. I sang that I had a little clown nose on, and at the end I said, I'm sorry if I took up too much of your time or whatever the line is. And
that
then
is correct.
I heard some mom go, "Aw," from the audience, and I was like, nailed it. And I was in like, I don't know. I was like 13. I was like, yes.
I love that. And you flew home on that wave of adulation.
Yes. Oh yeah. I was like, this is performing. No, I get what you're saying though, because it is structured like her imagination, her like desire to become a performer and her placing herself at the very beginning. I mean, that's kind of like how we're introduced to her character is her imagining herself in Velma's place, and it's a fabrication of her mind or whatever.
My other thing in the movie, and I'm really struggling to find things to bitch about with this movie.
I know, it's hard.
It is the ugliest fucking diary I have ever seen in my life.
Yes.
Like, did someone just go to like Joann's and get some shiny metallic fabric and some pipe cleaners and then laboriously decorate a book?
Yeah, I wonder. Like, I wonder if they have like what the historical accuracy is. Like, is there a dramaturg on set who's like, actually, this kind of fabric didn't exist in 1920? Do you know what I mean?
And they said, don't care. We're going to do it
anyway.
Don't
care. It's a Hollywood movie, baby. We're stretching the imagination.
So I have a feeling that you are also an IMDb trivia nerd like myself.
Oh, I do. I do love the trivia.
So my two favorite things, one is an actual bit of trivia and another is phrasing. My two favorite bits of trivia on IMDb about Chicago are, one, Christine Baranski plays Mary Sunshine, which, spoiler alert, on stage is a man in drag who is then revealed to be a man in Act Two.
I don't remember that. What?
Oh, yeah. It probably flew over your childhood mind.
Yeah, I was just like, oh, whatever. Not paying attention.
Where's Brenda Braxton? So, Christine Baranski said in an interview that she felt guilty for taking a role away from a drag queen. So, in her head, she decided that she would play Mary Sunshine as a closeted lesbian. Just okay. A fabulous 1920s lesbian.
Bringing representation to the role.
Yep. Love that. My other favorite bit of trivia is it's one of those people who's like, in the song All That Jazz, they reference Lucky Lindy. Lucky Lindy was the nickname for aviation pioneer and noted anti-Semite Charles Lindbergh.
Oh, no.
He was a noted anti-Semite, and he was Hitler, we love him. And a eugenicist. I love the fact that someone felt the need to point that out.
Yeah.
In the Chicago trivia?
I feel like also that trivia was probably written in like 2003.
Oh, yeah.
So instead of there being like a tweet, like, debunking thread on like, well, guess what? This part is actually anti-Semitic. It's just hidden in this like IMDb trivia from 2003.
I love secret trivia. I really, really do.
Yeah.
What is your go-to song from Chicago?
Oh man, I love Roxy Hart. Roxy. Is it just Roxy? Is that just the name of the song?
Yeah,
Roxy?
Just Roxy, yeah.
Let me pull up my playbill again. Reference the musical numbers.
It's a great song.
I also love I Can't Do It Alone. Because I can't do it alone. I love that song. I used to sing that song and do like my own choreography in my room.
Oh, what was your choreography?
Oh, just like a very watered down bad version of what Catherine Zeta-Jones does in the film.
You know, honestly, where is this lip sync video from you?
Oh gosh, I know, right?
This is the one that people are clamoring for.
That's true. There are a few songs that the whole point of my thread was like all the songs that really meant a lot to me growing up, and I felt like if I did ones that I didn't know that well, it would feel really inauthentic and not the same. But there are like a few, like maybe like less than four that like I didn't do that I'm like, I feel like it's the time has passed, but hey, you can revive it anytime.
You know what? We should really talk about reviving that in conjunction with the release of this episode. So we hit them on all fronts.
Oh, wow. Branding.
Mm-hmm. Synergy. Oh, I love synergy.
Yes.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
I think Roxy is probably my favorite number. It's a perfectly written song, and the monologue is brilliant.
Yes, it's so good. And the costumes, so good.
I mean, the staging of that number is so mesmerizing.
Yes.
And I remember I went on a date with a boyfriend at the time, my second time seeing Chicago, and he was about to go to the bathroom. And I was like, don't you dare. Roxy's about to happen. And the number ended. And he was like, oh, thank you. That's the only number I was really excited about from the trailer. And I was like, yeah, because you have eyes.
Yeah. You're like, wow, I'm glad that You said that, otherwise we wouldn't go on any more dates.
And we were together for a year and a half.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes. I don't know where he is now. I can't find him online.
Oh, really? You've looked for him?
Oh, yeah.
In recent times?
I Google, like, it was a pandemic. I have nothing else to do.
No,
I Google
literally going through the
all
Rolodex.
All of my ex-boyfriends. Yeah.
I know that's, I did the same thing at the beginning of the lockdown. Hey, you still with that girl? What's up? How's everything going? I'm by myself.
Oh, to be alone. The greatest luxury during pandemic times is loneliness.
Yes, actually, because while I did text a few men from my past at the beginning of all of this, I do have to say I'm very thankful I'm not stuck with some like boy who doesn't know how to do his own laundry, because I would have kicked him out already.
Well, it's very easy to do laundry. You unscrew the broom from the broomstick and you use that to wash your clothes in the tub with dish soap.
And yes.
Then you use a salad spinner to dry your delicates.
Oh, thank you. You should actually text all of my exes and tell them that.
But here is my train of thought. Boys who don't know how to do their own laundry, oh, I would have shot them dead like Roxy shoots Fred Casely dead. Oh, right.
Yes.
Another important point that I wanted to address. The one actual thing that I do not love about the movie is, and I understand why they did it, they soften Roxy by changing her reaction to shooting Fred.
Oh, like she's not as angry? Vindicated or something?
On Broadway, she shoots him, he dies, and her only reaction is, I gotta pee.
Oh.
And here, she's like sobbing and shaking.
Yeah.
It makes it more of a moment of passion and less of like, mm-hmm. Oh, fuck you, asshole. No, I'm going to be a star and you're not standing in my way.
True.
But I also don't know if I want to sit and watch a movie where a woman kills a man and then turns to the camera for all intents and purposes and says, I got to pee.
Yeah, I mean, I'm 100% I'm sure that was the creative team in the studio being like, we have to make her kind of likable.
And what's shocking to me upon rewatch is how little they actually do to make her likable.
Yeah, but you're on her side, like, yeah, throughout basically the entire movie.
But she really doesn't. Amazing. She really doesn't soften the character, and she does not go for sympathy. And mm-hmm. She's very stupid.
Yeah.
In a way that isn't making fun of the stupidity.
No, I know. I mean, it's like, because I feel like your first kind of glimpse at like, oh, this girl doesn't really have a handle on reality is like her genuinely believing that this like furniture salesman is going to get her like some performance job or something. And like, she just is believing everything that he's saying and just going along with it. And like, and then, yeah, like her like kind of inundation into like the prison and like the way that the first couple interactions she has with Velma and how like, basically Velma's like, don't touch my underwear, you know, like that kind of thing. It's like, yeah, it's
same.
It's interesting. Same. Yeah, actually, please don't.
I mean, Renee Zellweger, Roxy, if you want to go wash someone's underwear, Mary has a list of exes who don't know
yes,
how. So
they need it. They need it more. So
you know,
much
I'm gonna add Roxy to our group chat and introduce her to them so she can get them squared away. I think it's really easy to forget that this was not a surefire hit when it came out. This was a mm-hmm. huge, huge risky gamble that we all kind of thought was going to be just another flop, because there mm-hmm. had not been a successful movie musical since The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas.
Mm. And I read too that the last time that a musical won Best Picture was like Oliver in like 1968 or something.
Yes. Yes.
It's like really been a minute.
And I mean, totally deserved. I think it really is a great movie. I think even with that list of movies that we listed earlier, this one is still a brilliant, engrossing piece of cinema and works on every level that you could ask a movie to work on. The other thing that kind of gets lost over the course of history is it was a big deal that they cast Queen Latifah.
Mm.
And it doesn't seem like that now because she's done so much. I mean, she played Bessie Smith for HBO for that movie, which is basically Mama Morton in retrospect is kind of her audition to play Bessie Smith.
Mm.
But she's one of the standouts of the movie.
She's so good. She's so good.
They're all great. And young Susan Meisner was Pop That Gum One More Time, Bernie.
Yeah.
And Susan Meisner, for those of you who don't know, played Joan McCracken in Fosse Verdon on FX.
Perfect segue.
she was Stan's wife on The Americans.
Amazing.
And I believe she played Lonely Boy and Little Jay's mother on Gossip Girl.
Oh my God. A working actress.
We love to see it.
Love it.
So I do want to address the stage versions because this is one of those shows that has such an insane history. There's that entire episode of Fosse Verdon dedicated to how horrible they were to each other in the making of Chicago and all of the shit that went down behind the scenes. But never forget, Liza Minnelli stepped in after learning the role in like 2 days and played Roxy for a couple of weeks.
Incredible.
Never forget that. So this is new information. I just found this out. I do not think that this is public knowledge. When they did it at Encores, when they did the production at Encores that eventually transferred to Broadway and won all the Tonys and is still running, if Broadway were running, it was supposed to be Bebe Neuwirth as Velma and Liza as Roxy.
Mm.
And Liza dropped out at the last minute because there was a scheduling conflict. And Anne Rhine King was always going to choreograph. And she said, oh, well, I guess I already know the choreography and I have done it before. Okay, I'll play Roxy.
And it's funny that happened again. Like Liza doing the opposite this time, though.
Yeah. This was Annie's turn to shine.
Yes. Everything happens for a reason.
And important note, the Broadway Chicago does not recreate the original Fosse choreography. It is Fosse-esque choreography.
Mm. Well, that's fascinating. Trivia added to the IMDb. But because I was reading too, like a little bit about how I was reading about how the original, it was a play.
Yeah.
It was like a play. And then the original Broadway show actually didn't last that long.
No.
It was like less than 1,000 performances. And then it became the longest running revival when it was revived.
Everyone always says that Chicago was ahead of its time. I actually don't think that's true. I think that the story of Chicago is timeless. I think that it applies to any era. And I think that when it's up against a chorus line, which is not an extremely dark, cynical, sexy show, people wanted to see the new thing and not Chicago, which kind of makes you feel bad about being, it indicts the audience. You have paid money to sit in the theater to watch this show about murderers who have careers because audiences buy tickets to see them perform.
Yeah.
And so it forces you to ask if you are part of the problem as well when it's done right. And I will say I have only seen Chicago on stage once, and that was with Miss Lisa Rinna and her husband, Mr. Harry Hamlin.
Oh, wow. Wonderful.
It was great.
So cool.
Sorry, there was a tone to my voice, but actually I really love Lisa Rinna and she was a fantastic Roxy.
No, the way that you said it actually made me think that it was like, you were like presenting the information. And I was like, here for it.
Great.
It was wonderful. Yes, perfect.
There's also, for those of you who want to continue a deep dive, and Mary, if you have not seen this, I highly recommend that you get on it. So Goldie Hawn and Liza Minnelli had a TV special in the early 80s called Goldie and Liza Together.
Oh, wow.
There are many highlights. Among them, Goldie Hawn wearing a trench coat sings YMCA while scantily clad muscle men bench press her.
Perfect aesthetic.
Liza sings Bad Girls with slow-mo choreography.
Okay.
And it ends with the two of them doing all that jazz.
Wow.
Which is basically their audition for the movie, because they
thought that it was happening.
One of the many permutations that this movie has had over the years was Goldie Hawn and Liza were going to do it.
And Goldie Hawn would be Roxy?
Yes.
Okay. Incredible alternate universe thing to think about.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like when they were working on the Evita movie, which also took forever to come to screen, mm-hmm. Liza did a 30-minute taped audition for director Ken Russell.
Oh my gosh. She's
like wearing the blonde wig and do it like fully made up, costumed as Eva Peron. Where is that footage? I would spend so much money on that footage.
Actors
Fund and SAG-AFTRA Foundation need to get on that, auction that off.
Archive it for our personal use to just watch and admire.
It's our idea, so we need to get copies and then auction it off. But we need free copies.
Yes.
And then, of course, Madonna was in talks to do it at one point.
Yes. Yeah.
It doesn't thrill me. Mm. It doesn't make me as excited as the prospect of a Goldie and Liza situation.
I can't even imagine. I mean, I guess as Roxy, again, she would be Roxy. Madonna.
I'm not sure.
Because I kind of could see maybe that, but it would be, I feel like it would have one of those weird, like 80s or not like early 90s aesthetics of like really cheesy, like where like now we would be like, it would be so camp and we'd be like, ha ha, love yes. it, but ha ha, you know? But like the Renee Zellweger and Catherine Zeta-Jones is so perfect
to take it
seriously.
It has not aged. Like, it doesn't seem like a time capsule, even down to the cast, because so often mm-hmm. you watch a movie and you're like, oh, what happened to that person? Or, oh, wow.
No, they're all still here.
Yeah. Remember when Josh Hartnett was a thing?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But this, like, Taye Diggs is still working and thriving. Yes. Richard Gere is still working. Like, those, obviously, Renee Zellweger just had a huge comeback with Judy.
Yes, yes.
And it's just, it's a flawless cast. It really, mm-hmm. I really do think it is a flawless movie, an almost flawless movie.
I know the costume design, I kind of can't get over.
Oscar
winning. Gotta talk about it again. Oscar winning costume design.
So what's your favorite Roxy dress?
Well, I did already reference the Roxy dress in Roxy, the number. But actually, Funny Honey, like when I actually noticed it more upon this viewing. She's wearing, I love this pink kind of like slip that she's wearing, but then these garters that are so detailed, like this gorgeous silk that's just pinned in like the most incredible way, holding up her stockings. I was like, give me this entire outfit, please. I'll wear it to just like a party, because now you can wear lingerie as a thing. It's like a fashion thing now. I do it. Well, if I could go to a party.
You always could. People might look askance at you, but you could always go to a party in your underwear. Like,
you always could. You always could go to a party in your underwear. Come on. No, but now I feel like it's more acceptable. Like, I feel like people wouldn't be questioning to be like, oh yeah, that's just fashion. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, I love fashion.
Mm-hmm.
I think my favorite Roxy dress is the black sequined nowadays dress. Mm-hmm. Like cut down to her navel.
Oh my God, I know. And of course she's ripped, so it looks perfect.
Oh, and we do need to point out, before I ask my final question, we do need to point out she was way ahead of the curve in terms of giving herself a quarantine haircut, because she gave herself a tight peroxide perm with nothing but a prison mirror, an old toothbrush, and a contraband bottle of peroxide. Final question. Does this musical stand on its own without knowledge that it is a Broadway show?
I think it does.
Yeah, 100%. It's 100%. One of the very few that I think... It's one of the very few that I think does not benefit from knowledge of the original stage property.
Yeah, because I think from what I read, the film actually reinvigorated the Broadway version.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So it actually was like it worked in reverse almost. Because, yeah, the film is... I think the film does such an incredible way of combining the theatricality of stage moments, where they have a lot of shots where it's clearly like they're trying to emulate a Broadway feel of like looking at like a theater, you know, in a lot of the numbers, because it's so built in to the narrative too, that it's like a performing, that's part of like the story, is that they're vaudeville cabaret performers or whatever, and it does such a good job of combining that theatricality with the kind of like set of just like a standard Hollywood movie, where it has both pieces seamlessly integrated, in my opinion.
Well, there you have it, guys. The verdict is unanimous, not guilty. And this is movie musical magic.
Yes, 100%.
Mary Neely, thank you so much for joining me today. What a delight.
Thank you. Oh, I had so much fun. Thank you for having me.
I'm so happy that you chose this one. So I got to talk about something, I got to watch something that I really love.
Yeah, I was happy too, because I was like worried when I read the description. I was like, oh no, is he going to want me to talk shit about this movie? Because I really love it. And then I was so happy, like immediately you were like, so I love this movie. I was like, thank God.
I mean, I can make anybody hate anything for 1 minute, but I didn't need to this time.
Wonderful.
Thank you so much. And everyone, thank you for listening. And please tune in next week for another episode of Movie Musical Madness.
This episode of Movie Musical Madness was edited by Kyle Moore with theme music by Sunshine Music. And thank you for listening to Movie Musical Madness, part of the Broadway Podcast Network. You can find out more about the podcast and me at bpn.fm/Movie Musical Madness.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.